This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the USA Today newspaper. I'm Carol Kugler, your Thursday reader, and today is Thursday, April the 25th. Well, as I'm looking at the front page articles, one is bad news, one is, in my opinion, good news. So I think I'll start with that one. Billions in foreign aid signed by Biden. After 6 months, the wrinkle of election year politics and the threat of a House leadership coup, Congress has passed a long-awaited $95 billion foreign aid bill that has global implications. The Senate on Tuesday approved the package, which will funnel $60 billion to support Ukraine, $17 billion for Israel, $9 billion in humanitarian aid for Gaza and elsewhere, and $8 billion for allies in the Indo-Pacific with a bipartisan 79-18 vote. It also includes legislation that would force TikTok's Chinese parent company to divest from the social media app or face an effective ban in the United States. Unlike in the House, where lawmakers voted for each of the provisions independently, senators had to cast a single vote for or against all of the provisions combined. And there's a picture, not really having to do with this article necessarily. It says Mitch McConnell and Charles Schumer flank Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the U.S. Capitol on December 12th. And, of course, he's been here a number of times to request funds, as he has gone to other countries, European countries as well. Continuing, President Joe Biden signed the bill into law Wednesday. Moments after the signing, the Pentagon announced a $1 billion military aid package for Ukraine that includes air defense missiles, ammunition to shoot down drones, artillery shells, and other equipment. It's a good day for America, it's a good day for Europe, and it's a good day for world peace, Biden said in remarks from a White House dining room. For real, this is consequential. Tuesday's vote concludes a lengthy debate across both chambers of Congress that reflected shifting attitudes within the GOP about the United States' role in the world, pitting Republican leaders against their own rank-and-file members and, at times, the de facto leader of the party, former President Donald Trump. A sizable portion of the Republican conference in both chambers voted against aid to Ukraine, which has been fighting back against a Russian invasion since February 2022. Opponents of additional aid argued the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine, and the taxpayer funds would be better spent on domestic priorities or paying down the nation's estimated $1.5 trillion budget deficit. Proponents of the foreign aid framed it as an investment that would keep the country out of a war, that a victory over Ukraine would prompt Russian President Vladimir Putin to attack European allies that the U.S. is sworn to defend under the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They eventually prevailed as Republicans and Democrats in both chambers came together to pass the aid. And that's why I said it's a good news article. No matter how you feel personally about sending aid either to Ukraine or Israel or other parts of the world, first, our Congress actually worked together and compromised and came together to make a vote. And two, it kept just a very few Republicans, Marjorie Taylor Greene's little group, from ruling the Republican Party and keeping Speaker Johnson from making the decision. So maybe it just makes everything work better. This is an important day for America and a very important day for freedom-loving countries around the world, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Tuesday. I think we've turned the corner on the isolationist movement, he said. I think we've made some progress, and I think it's going to have to continue because we've got big problems. China, Russia, Iran. You could argue that this is a more challenging time right now than it was leading up to World War II. 9 Senate Republicans voted in favor of the legislation, despite voting against it when the Senate considered the package in February. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, R. of Oklahoma, was one of those who switched his vote. He said he and a group of other conservative senators began working with former President Donald Trump and Republican leadership in both chambers to come up with a package that more Republicans could support. Provisions to make around $9.5 billion in aid to Ukraine alone instead of a grant and to seize Russian foreign assets to fund Ukraine's fight were part of that, he said. Trump posted on Truth Social last week that Ukraine's survival is important to the U.S., despite long-held skepticism of Ukraine aid. "I think Trump had more to do with that than we did," Mullen told reporters Tuesday. "The idea that Trump was part of it really helped a lot of people know that, well, it's political, and gave political cover to some degree." House Speaker Mike Johnson initially resisted the foreign aid package, but ended up playing a pivotal role in advancing the legislation at the risk of his job. Multiple hard right lawmakers have threatened to unseat him. And by multiple, there are only about four that are really, really over there hard right, as they did with former Speaker Kevin McCarthy, for putting a government spending bill to avoid a shutdown up for a House floor vote. That threat remains a possibility when the House returns from a week-long recess on Monday. Johnson had opposed additional funding for Ukraine before he was elevated to the speakership after McCarthy's ouster, but after multiple intelligence briefings and meetings with multiple factions of his conference, he emerged in recent weeks with a starkly different perspective. "To put it bluntly, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. My son is going to begin in the Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is so many American families," Johnson told reporters Saturday. "This is not a game. This is not a joke." So he got the facts from all the meetings he was attending, of course, Secret Service and secret information, and so that's why he could put it together. Border battle. Mounting pressure. Biden first requested the funding in mid-October, just weeks after Hamas invaded Israel and kicked off months of retaliatory strikes in Gaza, calling for the U.S. to stand with its allies. Republicans demanded sweeping border security changes in exchange for their support. A bipartisan working group in the Senate brokered a deal to include what it said were the most significant changes to migration policy in decades. But Trump, en route to capturing the 2024 GOP nomination for president, slammed the proposal as insufficient. Johnson declared the deal would never pass the House, and Senate Republicans voted it down. The Senate passed the foreign aid plan without the border provisions in February. When it reached the House, Republicans again demanded border security provisions be attached to the legislation. They refused to advance the foreign aid bill for months as Johnson attempted to push the Senate to take up the House's hardline border bill. Meanwhile, Johnson kept facing mounting political pressure to act from both Democrats and moderate Republicans. The specter of a backdoor method to force a vote hung over the negotiations, and Johnson was deeply out of alignment with the other three congressional leaders, including McConnell, for whom passing Ukraine aid became a part of his legacy. The Biden administration's intelligence briefings and the change to a loan helped clinch the deal. Israel, Gaza divide Democrats. As Republicans dealt with infighting in their conference, Democrats grappled with their own divisions. A group of progressive lawmakers resisted sending additional aid to Israel as the country's war against Hamas killed tens of thousands of Palestinians and created dire humanitarian conditions in the Gaza Strip. Frustration over the administration's approach to Israel reached a boiling point among Democrats when 7 aid workers were killed in a strike earlier this month. Calls for conditioning aid to Israel, directing how the aid can be used, and enforcing violations of that use grew louder. 37 progressive Democrats in the House voted against the funding for Israel in the House because it did not add conditions, though that represented only about a third of the House Progressive Caucus. I support so much that's in this. We absolutely have to provide Ukraine with aid. I support the humanitarian assistance that's in this. I even support the TikTok provision, Senator Jeff Merkley, D. of Oregon, told USA Today. But the conditions in Gaza are horrific. I support defensively aid for Israel, but I can't support sending more bombs when the style of warfare in Gaza is producing enormous civilian casualties and the restriction of aid is producing famine. And, of course, the Israelis, Israel would say the style of warfare is their only option or style because of the tunnels and the rebels, the fighters were under all the buildings that they had to destroy in order to get to the tunnels. So it was a very difficult situation. Now here is the next front page article. Air in America is worst in 25 years. So I think we weren't aware of that. I thought it was getting better. And at the top of the article, before I start reading the actual small print in the article, nearly 2 in 5 Americans live in areas that received a failing grade for at least one air pollution measure. Nearly 44 million people live in areas with failing grades for all air quality measures. More than 131 million Americans lived in areas that showed unhealthy levels of air pollution. And there's a picture of actually, I'm not sure, it's a big city anyway, one super high rise. So it's not Chicago. It's one really tall building and the rest not so tall. Anyway, of a city and the smog, fog over enveloping the city. Maybe it'll say in the article. And then in large print, it says, wildfires and climate change eat into progress, report says. And here is a quote that will be in the article. There is no safe level to particle pollution. We were not meant to breathe this in as humans. And that's a Harvard Harvard School of Public Health, Dr. Carrie Nadeau. Americans are breathing more toxic air now than in the past quarter century, a new report from the American Lung Association says. The findings released Wednesday show the worst toxic particle pollution in the 25 years the ALA has released its annual State of the Air report. The spike in pollution, experts say, is likely the result of climate change, including an increase in wildfires. More than 131 million Americans live in areas that showed unhealthy levels of air pollution, the report showed. We're seeing the most days and the very unhealthy or hazardous air quality level due to spikes in particle pollution, Paul Billings, ALA's Senior Vice President of Public Policy, told USA Today. Despite a lot of progress on air pollution cleanup, we're seeing the impacts of climate change, particularly wildfires, overwhelming a lot of cleanup, particularly with respect to these daily spikes of particle pollution. The report looked at fine particulate matter with daily and annual averages and ozone pollution regulated under the Clean Air Act. The report found nearly 2 in 5 Americans live in areas that received a failing grade for at least one air pollution measure. Nearly 44 million people live in areas with failing grades for all air quality measures. The populations living in the worst air quality are largely people of color who also tend to have higher rates of chronic health problems such as asthma, diabetes, and heart disease, which makes them especially vulnerable to poor air. Or maybe one causes the other. Together, short-term and constant particle pollution contribute to tens of thousands of deaths a year, the report found. Respiratory ailments such as asthma attacks can be triggered by high levels of short-term pollution, but longer-term exposures increase the risk of heart attack and stroke.
barn.
The communities with the best air quality included Bangor, Maine, Wilmington, North Carolina, and Honolulu. Except for Honolulu, most of the cities with the best air quality were majority white. The report uses new Environmental Protection Agency rules finalized in February for annual fine particulate matter pollution that limits levels from 12 micrograms per cubic meter to 9. Experts said that better reflects health problems associated with this type of pollution. There is no safe level to particle pollution, Dr. Carrie Nadeau, the John Rock Professor of Climate and Population Studies at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, told USA Today. We were not meant to breathe this in as humans. Still, she said, the lower level of allowable particulate matter in the air, even though the limit was reduced by just 3 micrograms, will save lives and health costs. By 2032, it will amount to $46 billion in cost savings and help the U.S. avoid 4,500 premature deaths, 800,000 cases of asthma, and 290,000 lost workdays, an EPA analysis found. Meanwhile, the level of ozone, also known as smog, generally improved across the U.S., the report noted. Ozone is a pollutant driven by warmer temperatures, which climate change has exacerbated. Once in the air, it's hard to remove. Exposure to ozone creates what the ALA describes as sunburn of the lungs. It triggers shortness of breath, coughing, and asthma attacks, and can shorten the lifespan of people who are exposed to it. The western U.S. experienced the bulk of the pollution because of pollution from roadways, agriculture, oil, and gas industries, and seemingly endless wildfires. Communities like California's San Joaquin Valley, along the nation's agricultural heartland, continue to be overrepresented for taking in the worst pollution in the ALA report. The city of Bakersfield, Fresno, and Visalia, hubs for agricultural production, shipping, and warehouses where the population is predominantly Latino, make up the top 5 cities in each of the reports measured for 24-hour particle pollution, year-round particle pollution, and ground-level ozone pollution. Gustavo Aguirre, Jr., a Bakersfield resident and Associate Director of Climate and Environmental Justice at the nonprofit Central California Asthma Collaborative, said the numbers are not new to the community. He likened the air quality findings to reports of the region's record numbers on drunken driving. We would not have a sober day, he said, adding the area hasn't seen clean days in decades. For us, this is just a continuation of bad news. The collaborative, founded to help educate residents with asthma about health risks, has moved to provide updated air filtration systems to homes, as well as community air monitoring networks to give people a better sense of local air quality levels. The organization also has looked at shifting public policy to regulate burn days when old orchards are set afire and electrify big rigs that rely on diesel fuel, a key polluter on the main highways that bring agriculture from the valley to cities in the north and south. The region also faces unique challenges because of its inland location. Pollution from the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles travels to the valley where it becomes trapped. Wildfires throughout the California contribute to the problem. Efforts to reduce pollution levels over many years in the region appear not to have saved people in the San Joaquin Valley from particulate matter. A lot of people feel at this point that there's not much that they can do to address it or change it, said Sarah Sharp, a Fresno resident and the collaborative's deputy executive director. It's just kind of a state of where we either have to live or we choose to live. Dr. John Balmes, a professor emeritus at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, who provided an academic review on the report's health section, acknowledge there have been improvements in air quality. Ozone levels have declined in some places, but much of the progress has been wiped out by the wildfire smoke and related effects of climate change. The same pollutants that affect our health also contribute to climate change, he said. The pollutants increase the risk of cardiovascular problems such as heart failure and arrhythmia, as well as respiratory ailments such as asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Breathing in high levels of particulate matter in the long term has been linked to brain damage that puts people at higher risk of Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and other related dementias. The report used only data from 2020 to 2022. It did not include the impact of the historic wildfires across Canada in 2023 that choked many eastern U.S. cities, turning skies orange. These circumstances were thought to be unique to the West Coast fire seasons. The wildfires in Canada awakened New Yorkers to toxic air quality levels. Black and Latino residents in the South Bronx already knew well. Apartments in the South Bronx sit near several intersecting freeways, power plants, and waste management facilities that create some of the worst air quality in the region. Before the wildfires, the South Bronx had some of the highest asthma rates in the U.S., and now things are worse. Our community is suffocating on a daily basis, said Leslie Vasquez, Clean Air Project organizer for the environmental justice nonprofit South Bronx Unite. When they go home, the air is also breathed in on a daily basis. The group has installed dozens of air monitors across the South Bronx to record pollution levels and the wind, heat, and humidity that contribute to people getting sick from pollutants. Combined heat and humidity, especially during the summer, can trigger additional deaths as temperatures and severe weather increase amid climate change. And we are not immune from all of this here. They're talking about the West Coast and the East Coast, but they said on our news just yesterday that we are included, St. Louis City especially, in